Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today is February 6, 2016. My name is Matt, and I am your host, and we're going to be live here for the next 88 minutes. Once again, as always, it seems like it's been a month since I've been behind the mic, and I can't wait to get behind it. And today is going to be no different than some other week, whereas I've got an opinion to say, and I've written it down here. I've got my notes, and I'm going to proceed to do that now. Ladies and gentlemen, I came across a news article in which the headline of the article kind of irritated me. It's an Associated Press article, and the headline reads, "Active shooter training growing in popularity." Okay, so what is it about that headline that irritates me? It irritates me because it almost makes it sound like it's just a cool thing to do. It's hip, or it's the latest fad. Now, the content in the article is okay, but it made me think of all the ignorant people who for years I've been warning to get ready and get prepared. They would look at me funny, dismiss anything I have to say, or avoid me just so they wouldn't have to face the fact that they are a victim in waiting. A victim in waiting. It's just waiting to happen. A lot of what this article says I've been promoting for years. So I'm going to read the article to you so you can see just how far ahead of the curve Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures has been. Now, I'm going to read this article here. It's pretty cool. It's going to be brief. It's not too short. It's not too long, but it's brief because it's got some good information in it. This one here, "Active Shooter Training Growing in Popularity" by Andrew Welsh Huggins. Westerville, Ohio. Study your surroundings. Find exits. Identify makeshift weapons. Americans are gleaning those tips and others as they pack classes on how to react to survive to a active shooting. Now, I teach this all the time, the three A's. Acknowledge a threat, be aware of your surroundings, and avoid it if at all possible. So, I mean, they're just talking stuff I've been teaching for years. Now, such training is already common at schools, colleges, and businesses, but sessions for the general public are the next step in confronting fears of mass violence that have been around for years, and many came to a head after the 1999 Columbine High School shootings. Police have offered awareness training in Michigan and in Georgia, while more than 600 people have attended classes taught by the Potter County Sheriff's Office in Amarillo, beginning about 3 years ago. Public demand increased dramatically after a shooting in December that killed 14 in San Bernardino, California, said Lieutenant Scott Giles, a class instructor in Amarillo. We continue on with the article. "This is really just something that was born out of necessity," Giles says. "Active shooter events just continue to happen. Potter County is one of several sheriff's departments that provide training based on CRAS, curriculum, civilian response to active shooter events. CRAS teaches an approach dubbed ADD, avoid the situation by getting out, deny by barricading inside a room as a last resort, defend by fighting back." So again, it was avoid, deny, and then fight back or defend yourself. A class offered by Westville at Columbus suburb filled up so quickly that a second had to be scheduled for later that month. The city of about 38,000 with a per capita income well above the rest of Ohio regularly tops list of the county's best suburbs. "We just feel the world has changed. There's an evil out there," said retiree Tom Madine, 67, who attended the first Westerville class last month with his wife. Sue Madine, along with dozens of others, joined the class as well. "People today understand that such threats are real and could happen in their own communities," said Police Chief Joe Morbitzer. "Officers teach a run, hide, fight curriculum similar to ADD. Part of the issue is that people don't know how to avoid becoming victim." Morbitzer said, "In today's society, that's bad, but you've got to practice victim avoidance, but you have to do it." I mean, we teach this stuff all the time. At the January 28 Westerville class, officers Dan Pignatelli and John Jeffries emphasized situational awareness. They mixed practical tips for instance. The best exit in an emergency is not always the way you came in. And if you're hiding, always turn the lights off, with case studies from the 1999 Columbine shooting and the 2007 Virginia Tech killings and others. As a last resort, a weapon could be as near as the closet chair, pair of scissors, or a blunt object. Now, that's a tool of opportunity. We teach about that all the time in our classes. You've got to have a game plan. Jeffrey is a 31-year police veteran, told the audience. His comment was part of a bigger point both instructors drove home throughout the two-hour class, that people must overcome inaction when something bad happens. Now, this paragraph is interesting. Instructors in Ohio and elsewhere don't take a position on whether people legally allowed to carry a gun should intervene to stop an attacker, but they worry about what happens once police arrive. I'll tell you why they don't say anything, because they're scared to death to be liable for making a statement that if you've got a gun and you're able to use it and you can stop the threat right then and there, go ahead and do it. Don't wait. Stop the threat. Instead of running away and watching everybody else die, if you've got the gun and you're available and you're capable of a shooter, take care of business. Continuing. When a civilian, let alone a trained officer, opens up fire in an active shooting situation, there's a good chance that the civilian may be mistaken for the shooter. Well, that's where training comes in. If you know what you're doing, you can handle yourself in body language. An officer who knows what he's doing, is worth his salt, can read language if a person is obedient to commands. Now, I lost my spot here. Here we go. The security expert who has studied some of the country's worst shootings, including Virginia Tech, said you could be mistaken, possibly. Denise Bunzi attended the January class in Westerville with her parents. Afterward, the 60-year-old guidance counselor said the most important lesson was that people have options even in worst-case scenarios. Despite what's going on, you really have to do a mindset of, I will survive this and I will do anything I can do to survive this, she said. I never thought about that in that way. Now, if you have the means to stop the threat, then stop the threat. If I run, it's to run to a better position. If I hide, it's to hide to ambush. And if I defend, it's going to be to defend until it's over. Stop the threat until it's over. Anyway, I read that article. I saw it, and I'm just thinking, active shooter training grows in popularity. It's not a game. It's not a video thing. It's not a popularity. It's not a fad. This is serious business. We teach all that in our classes. You should come and sign up for our classes. We actually have a class on the 13th. February 13th, and it's an all-day class. It's a self-defense and home invasion seminar. We do a lot of this stuff, awareness, acknowledgement of the threat, and avoidance if at all possible, and if you can't, know and master your weapon and your mind so that you can handle the situation. Okay, let's go into our show highlights. Today's CHL and Learn License to Carry segment will cover Penal Code 46.13, making a firearm accessible to a child. And a child is anyone 17 years or younger. So we're going to hit the law book for some detailed information on that topic. As always, we're going to review three stories from the NRA's American Rifleman, the Armed Citizens column, and see what we can glean from those stories. There's usually a doozy or two in those, so let's see what today brings on those stories. Today, the PEP section will cover one of my favorite topics, tornadoes. I do not like tornadoes. I'd rather be in a hurricane than a tornado. I can track hurricanes. Tornadoes do whatever the heck they want. So we're going to talk about that, what we can do to possibly save our necks in a tornado. My topic of interest section will cover lumens when it comes to light bulbs and handheld flashlights. Once you understand how lumens work, you can best pick the light bulbs or flashlights that work best for your situation. Our product spotlight, as discussed with Blackjack Firearms, will go over the Picatinny rail. What is the Picatinny rail and how did it come to be? That's going to be interesting for a lot of you who have a weapon and has got that rifle with all the different slots in them. What are they for? How do you use them? So on and so forth. So we'll be touching on that. My gun training demo, which I tried to get to last week, so go over the pros and cons of the different types of carrying methods for the license to carry holder. And this will be enlightening to many, so stand by for that, and hopefully we won't have any delays and we can get to that. At the top of the second hour, I'll be speaking with my special guests, Billy Conway and Rick Smith, from their host of their own show, On the Dock. A number of different radio stations carry that, so that'll be great to have them on. I want to talk to them about survival fishing and how the cherry fishermen like myself can survive in a disaster situation. Also, if time permits, I'll do a WTF moment towards the end of the show, and people like these, and they can raise an eyebrow or two. So we got a lot going on in the show, so without further details and without further delays, I'm going to move right into our license to carry section here. I was having a conversation with somebody about a loaded weapon, and one thing led into the other, and it brought us up to Penal Code 4613, making a firearm accessible to a child. So if you have a license to carry or are thinking about getting one, this is a very important aspect, and this goes for anybody, actually. Anybody who's got a license or doesn't have a license, keeping a firearm not accessible to a child. So here we go. And I'm bringing this up since one of my students was having a debate with me about carrying a handgun without a round in the chamber. And in my view, a gun without a round in the chamber that I'm carrying for self-defense would be the same as having a spare tire with no air in it. Like, what good is it? It's just dead extra weight. Then I made the comment that a gun without one in the chamber, in the eyes of the law, is still loaded. And that's clearly stated in Penal Code 4613, which we're about to read. And since that's the case, let's review it right now. I'm going to read to you the law, Penal Code 4613, making firearm accessible to a child. So if you got some note-taking materials, you might want to write this down. This would be good to know and reference later on. But let's take it from the top here. In this section, child means a person younger than 17 years of age. Readily dischargeable firearm means a firearm that is loaded with ammunition, whether or not a round is in the chamber. Secure means to take steps that a reasonable person would take to prevent the access to a readily dischargeable firearm by a child, including but not limited to placing a firearm in a locked container or temporarily rendering the firearm inoperable by a trigger lock or other means. Now, a person commits an offense if a child gains access to a readily dischargeable firearm and the person with criminal negligence, one, failed to secure the firearm, or two, left the firearm in a place to which the person knew or should have known the child would have gained access. Now, it is affirmative defense to prosecution under this section that if the child's access to the firearm, one, was supervised by a person older than 18 years of age and was for hunting, sporting, or other lawful purposes, or two, consisted of lawful defense by the child of people or property, or three, was gained by entering property in violation of this code, or four, occurred during a time when the actor was engaged in agricultural enterprise. Now, except as provided by subsection E, an offense under this section is a Class C misdemeanor. An offense under this section is a Class A misdemeanor if the child discharges the firearm and causes death or serious bodily injury to himself or another person. It continues on with a peace officer or other person may not arrest the actor before the seventh day after the date on which the offense is committed if, one, the actor is a member of the family as defined by Section 71.003 Family Code of the child who discharged the firearm, and two, the child in discharging the firearm caused death of or serious injury to the child. Now, this is a clarifier here. A dealer of firearms shall post in a conspicuous position on the premises where the dealer conducts business a sign that contains the following warning in block letters not less than 1 inch in height. And it states, it is unlawful to store, transport, or abandon an unsecured firearm in a place where children are likely to be and can obtain access to the firearm. So that's what the law looks at, and that's how they see it when it comes to giving access to a child the age of 17 years or younger. And what happens to you if you're the owner of the gun and you allow access to that child? You can get a Class C misdemeanor if the child has access to it, or if he causes injury to himself or another, it becomes a Class A misdemeanor to the owner of the firearm. Excuse me. Now, we go over all those things in our license to carry class, which we have one of today at 2:30. If you want to get in your car right now, I've probably got a couple spots left open. Get in your car, turn the station to KTEM 1400 AM as you're driving into Cameron. You can listen to me and get there in time to sign up for the class. Okay, we're going to move into our NRA section right now. As always, we pick up three stories from the NRA's American Rifleman, and I look at the Armed Citizens column, and I read these stories to see how people respond and react. I like to use the word respond better than react. Respond is more of a thoughtful process, whereas react is you're kind of going off the handle right then and there. So hopefully with training, we can respond. Now, these three stories come from August 2008, and the first story reads as follows. A long-running feud between two Nevada families came to a head when a participant in the feud entered a bar and grill and began shooting into a crowd of 300 patrons. Police say the gunman killed two brothers and wounded two other people. When he stopped to reload, a patron with a concealed carry permit saw a chance to intervene. The patron drew his pistol and fired, killing the gunman and preventing further bloodshed. Now, my commentary. Number one, first of all, I thought feuds like this were only on TV shows and cartoons. Seriously, I mean, you hear feuds with families going on forever. It's kind of like a TV comedy. These families have obviously not taken my nonviolent resolution section of my class. They need to come take my class. We'll talk about how talking things out, communication, how it works. Otherwise, they would be all speaking to each other in an adult to an adult manner. Number two. Thankfully, the owner of the bar and grill did not put up a victim disarmament sign. A victim disarmament zone sign. Remember we've talked about those? For those of you who don't know what that sign is, here in Texas they call it a penal code 30-06 or a penal code 30-07 sign. We call it victim disarmament zone signs. That's right. Okay. Number three. Fortunately for all the other patrons, a prepared customer pulled out his pistol and fired. So, you can't do that in a victim disarmament zone. So if you got to sign up, take it down. I think you'll do a lot better. All right, story number two. Again, 2008. According to White County, Tennessee Sheriff Odie Shoup, a man was leaving a home he'd just burglarized when he encountered the homeowner, Keith Gertley, on the front porch. The burglar coming out of the house asked Mr. Gertley, "Can I help you?" And Mr. Gertley said, "Yes, you're in my house, bud." That's when the intruder reached for the stolen pistol in his waistband. "Don't do it," Gertley said, drawing his 9mm. When the suspect failed to comply, Gertley, who holds a concealed carry permit, shot and killed him. "I'm afraid that if Mr. Gertley had not been armed, he would have been the one dead," the sheriff said, adding he's seen an increase in residents with carry permits. They're tired of having to be afraid all the time of criminals out there. So there you go. My commentary. I got a lot on this one. One, stupid intruder breaks in home. Two, stupid intruder confronts homeowner on way out of home. Three, stupid intruder pulls gun on armed homeowner. Four, stupid intruder does not comply to homeowner's commands. Five, prepared homeowner shoots stupid intruder. And six, end of story. That's quite simple. Story number three. Once again, from August 2008. Eugene Johnson was away when burglars first struck his home, trashing it and stealing money. But he was home less than 2 weeks later when his wife heard something or someone kick in the back door. Johnson, who spent nearly 3 years in a North Korean POW camp, quickly got his pistol and intervened. The burglar said, "Don't move, I have a gun," Johnson recalls. "I said, buddy, I got a gun too, and it's aimed right on you." Things got quiet then. Police say the suspect had fled. The homeowner acted appropriately, said District Attorney David Freed. Criminals who break into occupied homes assume the risk of being shot by homeowners. My commentary. Can you say Gran Torino? If you don't know what I'm talking about, watch the movie Gran Torino with Clint Eastwood. Excellent. I get this total impression of Clint Eastwood standing there saying, "I've got this gun armed at you." Two, I picture this crusty, nail-chewing, tack-spitting Korean vet saying to himself, oh, hell no. You're not breaking out of my house. And three, sure enough, Johnson secured his home and said words that would make any person's spine tingle. I've got a gun, and it's aimed right on you. So, three stories, pretty interesting. Learn what you can, glean what you can from those stories. Okay, what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a little break, 1 minute break. And when we come back, we're going to go over our pep section, which is going to go over tornadoes. And I think we'll get a little spin out of that and get a lot of information. So we'll be back in just a minute. Paul, go ahead, buddy.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is February 6, 2016. I'm Matt, your host, and we're still here live. Thank goodness. If you want to be a part of the show today, I didn't give out the number. The number is 254-773-1400. If you want to make contact with me via email, it's aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to our website at aaronsgunshop.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your support of this radio show is greatly appreciated, and there's many ways to support this show. A monetary donation is always welcome. Becoming a sponsor is another great way. Liking us on Facebook helps spread the word about the show, and showing up to our events gives us moral support. Calling into the show adds your input and opens up topics that may not have been otherwise discussed before. So if you like the show and would like it to continue and grow, your support is greatly appreciated. The Aaron's High Cap Adventure Show is not just another talking head show. This show gives out information that you can apply immediately for your self-well-being. So go to aaronsgunshop.com and check out our entire site. Look at the pictures, read the testimonials, listen to the past shows via the podcast, and together we can make a difference. If you have any positive suggestions, please let us know. And with your help, we can complete this show by growing into a full 2 hours. All right? It's going to be pretty good. So once again, the number here, 254-773-1400, or you can contact me via email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Now, I've got a thing about tornadoes. I don't like them. I really don't. When I think tornadoes are coming, man, I get all hyper mode, and I'm checking it out. I got my scanners out. I'm listening to the eyes of the sky and seeing what they're saying, watching the weather reports and clouds, and I just want to be prepared. So I was checking this out on the internet, and I came up to a site here, and it's telling you how to prepare for a tornado, and it's kind of brief and quick and to the point. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read it to you. So take some notes. If you don't know this, this would be great to learn. If you do know this, it'll be good to confirm it. But how to prepare for a tornado. Tornadoes can be devastating acts of nature, part of severe thunderstorms. And tornadoes are rotating, whirling winds that appear in funnel shape. These storms can reach winds of 300 miles per hour and can devastate neighborhoods and towns in minutes. In order to protect yourself and your family from this natural disaster, follow the instructions that I'm about to give you. First of all, prepare your family. Discuss a plan and practice it. Create a list with contact information, insurance information, and in case of emergency, out-of-town contacts. Make sure everyone in the family knows where to go, what to take, and how to be safe when a tornado hits. Store important documents just in case. Make copies of birth certificates, insurance information, and social security cards to bring with you if you need to evacuate. This will be valuable if you aren't able to return home immediately after the tornado. Set up means of communication. Make sure everyone in the family knows how to get in contact with everyone else. School number, work number, and cell phone number should be compiled on a list. Anyone, such as a babysitter that your children might be with during the emergency, should be included on the list. Keep it with the copies of your important documents. Know who's going to be in charge of having these forms if evacuation is necessary. Know the closest evacuation center. If you may be in a danger zone, it's important to know where the safest place to be is. In most cases, schools, the community center, and city buildings are used. These places, they'll have medical attention supplies. This can be used as a meetup place for your family after the storm. And I'll tell you what, this is me talking. You might want to talk to your local representatives wherever you're living and find out what those buildings are and what kind of supplies are being applied there. Okay, prepare your house. Create an emergency kit. This should include water and food for at least 72 hours. Having a means of communication or information, radio, satellite phone, etc. It's also important to include those things because you gotta have communication. Any first aid supplies, clothes, and toiletries that you may need should be stored along with flashlights and batteries. Build or designate a safe room. Rooms that can be typically used include basements, garages, interior rooms on the first floor. The room should have no windows, be anchored to the ground to avoid uplift, and be strong enough to withstand any flying debris it may come in contact with. Be aware that water may accompany the storm, so caution when using below-ground rooms as they may collect water. Arrange the secure household items. Arrange furniture that is turned away from windows, mirrors, or glass. This could cause broken glass to fly during the tornado, creating a hazard. Make sure any items that move during the storm are moved away from your family. Use eye bolts or eye brackets to secure large furniture to the walls. Then you've got to know what to watch for. Tornadoes usually only develop in the presence of thunderstorms, though the thunderstorm may be some distance away from you. So lightning, rain, and hail, especially if occurring after a tornado, watcher warning has been issued, should put you on guard. In addition, watch out for the following. Darkening skies, particularly if the sky appears a sickly greenish color, indicating hail, or an orangey color, dust being blown around by high winds. Strong, persistent rotation of the cloud base, or very calm and quiet conditions during or right after a thunderstorm. A rumble or a roar that sounds like a continuous thunder or sometimes a train or jet. Whirling debris near the ground, even in the absence of a funnel cloud. Or blue, green, or white flashes at ground level in the distance at night, a sign of power lines being snapped by high winds. So stay informed. Even if you know the signs of a tornado, you can't always rely on your own eyes and ears alone to know if it is coming. Listen to local radio stations or watch local TV to stay informed, especially during conditions that are likely to form tornadoes. Also, purchase a self-powered radio flashlight combo unit. This will allow you to stay informed, doesn't use batteries, and it provides light. Now, in the U.S., the best way to get information about severe weather is to get a NOAA weather radio. These can be purchased cheaply at most big box retailers and outdoor supply stores. If possible, find one with a backup battery power and a tone alert feature, which automatically notifies you when the National Weather Services issues a severe weather watch or warning in your area. Find a website with a local radar link or page. This will give you a real-time look at storm cells in your area. And because you can see the intensity and direction of movement of the storm cells and systems relevant to your home, you can judge more accurately when precautions should be taken. Several weather websites have that feature. I'm pretty sure KTEM's got that too. Listen for tornado watches and warnings. The National Weather Service in the U.S. issues both watches and warnings for severe weather. A tornado watch indicates the conditions that are right for a tornado development, and tornadoes are possible in your area. If you hear a tornado watch or a severe thunderstorm watch, you should pay special attention to weather conditions. A tornado warning indicates that a tornado has been seen in your area, or that radar indicates the presence of a tornado. If a tornado warning is issued, you should seek appropriate shelter immediately. Now, this one's a little different. A tornado emergency means that a tornado warning has been issued and it is heading toward a densely populated area. Seek appropriate shelter immediately and listen for additional weather reports. A severe thunderstorm warning means that a severe thunderstorm has been spotted. Now, finding shelter. If you are in a structure, find the most interior room on either the first floor or in the basement. Do not stand by windows or near anything that could possibly hit you, bookcases, chairs, etc. Put as many walls between you and the storm as possible. If you're in a mobile home or trailer, find the nearest secure structure. These places, even when secured down, offer little protection. And if you're in an open field, duck close to the ground and cover your head. Don't hide under a bridge or an overpass. Most importantly, watch out for flying debris and never try to outrun the storm. Wait it out if you can. Never leave your shelter until you are sure that the storm has passed and that it is safe to follow the next directions. High winds can still be dangerous, so do not go outside if debris is still moving in the air or on the ground. Now, after a tornado, shut off utilities. Since gas leaks can be extremely dangerous, the first thing you should do once you have handled the first step is turn off the gas, water, and electricity. Damage to one of the pipes or switches could cause a fire or an explosion. Never light a match or use a lighter to inspect that there may be a gas leak, if you suspect there's a gas leak, or if you have not already turned off the utilities. Inspect the damage. Use a flashlight, not a torch or a candle, to inspect your home, as there might be a gas leak. Note all damages, but mostly look for any structural damage that could be an immediate harm to your family. If you suspect a part of your home is not safe, leave and find shelter. And seek an evacuation center if necessary. If you or your family need medical attention or suspect structural damage that may be threatening in your home, seek a center. These often have supplies, but it is important to bring whatever emergency supplies you can with you. Now, during the storm, you want to stay alert. Make sure the storm is cleared out of your way before you return home or leaving your house to assess damage. The high winds may return, placing you once again in danger's way. Stay tuned to the radio for more information on the situation in your town or neighborhood. And then safely clean up what you can. Once it is safe to return to your home or come out, begin cleaning up what you can. Most hazardous objects, move them with care. And make note for your insurance company on what has been damaged. Taking pictures will help with later claims. Now, if you've been fortunate and haven't had anything happen to you, help others. If your family and property were unharmed, be thankful, but remember that not everyone was so lucky. So join in rescue efforts or volunteer. In this sentence here, I swallow hard when I say this. Always follow the orders of public officials when doing so to make sure that you are being constructive and not damaging the situation further. I make swallowing this easier if you have confidence in the leadership of your public officials. I'm just saying, okay? So check out who's in charge. See what's going on. Know what you have to do. Find out these locations. Hopefully you took down some notes and you're going to apply this the next time we have some severe weather coming around our way. Okay, so that's how to prepare for a tornado. I'm sure there's many other tips that you could probably look up, but this was a great little section here to get you started. I know I'm always looking at things when it comes to tornadoes to do whatever I can to put myself at ease, my family at ease, and to minimize the damage. So, okay, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take another break real quick. And when we come back, we're going to be hitting our topic of interest. This is pretty cool, too. A lot of people have flashlights and light bulbs, but they really don't know how to gauge them. So we're going to be talking about that on the other side. So we'll be back in just a minute.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-yard indoor range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques, drawing from concealment, clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills, period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll in one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4721 or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888, the number 2-BE-FREE. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Once again, it's February 6, 2016. I'm Matt, your host. And the number here, if you wish to call in, is 254-773-1400. If you want to make contact with me via email, it's aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Now, if you are looking for advanced or specialized training when it comes to using a firearm, you're at the right place. So if you just need to go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the High Cap Adventure page, and on that page is where we have listed our special training seminars. And those seminars include home and self-defense training seminar, which I have one next Saturday. I've got a few slots left. If you're interested, you should check it out. We've got a ladies-only home and self-defense training seminar, combat shotgun seminar, M4 close quarters combat training seminar, semi-auto rifle training seminar, and of course our PEP program seminar. So go to Aaron's High Cap Adventures page and read what each one has to offer. Seminars are geared for the homeowner or regular Joe or Jane on the street. These seminars are not designed for combat operators or spec operators, okay? So if you wish to sharpen your skills, give us a call. Groups of five or more can arrange for their own private classes. Aaronsgunshop.com, High Cap Adventure page. Sign up now for more info. We still got room for the February 13th class. It's going to be a very good class. So give us a check out on High Cap Adventure page. All right, we're going to be moving now to our topic of interest. We got a call on the line, Paul? Okay. Well, we'll take that call in just one second here once I get my notes set up. Caller, are you there? Can you hear me? Caller, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello. Who we got on the line?
This is Bill from Temple. Good morning. Good evening, I should say, I guess.
Well, how you doing, Bill? What can I do for you today?
I've already got my CHL, and I'm working on some knife throwing. I was wondering if you had some holsters for throwing knives.
Well, I don't really have holsters specifically. There's so many different types of knives out there that there'd have to be so many different types of configurations. I mean, I work with Kydex and all that, but I'm mostly doing it for guns. But I don't have knife holsters, no, sir.
Knife holsters. Okay. Well, thank you very much anyway.
Oh, great. No problem. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, back to topic of interest here. We're going to be talking about lights. Lumens, actually, information concerning light bulbs and flashlights and the standards to compare by. So what I've got here is I've got two different sets of notes. Excuse me. Still getting over a cold. The first one I want to go over is what are lumens when it comes to light bulbs? And I'm going to show you something on the screen. I don't know if you can see this or not, but when you get light bulbs, they've got this information ticket on the box. It gives you all sorts of information. And I'll read it to you. It says lighting facts per bulb. Brightness, in this particular scenario, it's 820 lumens. Estimated yearly energy cost, $7.23, based on 3 hours per day, 11 kilowatt hours. Cost depends on rates in use. Then it says life, based on 3 hours per day, 1.4 years. Then it shows light appearance, warm to cool, and it shows, I'm not really sure what that means. Energy use, 60 watts. Okay, so they've got these lighting facts on the packages. So let me read to you here. We'll get a basis of how to look for bulbs. In the old days of incandescent lighting, there were only one measurement that mattered, and that was wattage. A 60-watt bulb or 60-watt bulbs were brighter than 40-watt bulbs and not as bright as 80-watt bulbs. Nowadays, the FTC requires lighting manufacturers to include more detailed information about their lighting products, including color temperature, life, estimated yearly cost, and lumens. To someone unfamiliar with the lighting industry, you might be wondering, what are lumens anyway? Today, we'll discuss what lumens are and what they're listed and why they're listed on your lighting package. First of all, why lumens over watts? At their core, watts and lumens are measures of entirely different things. Wattage measures the amount of electrical power a device, or in this case, light bulb, consumes. Therefore, wattage is a measure of power or energy. Lumens, on the other hand, are a measure of brightness. To offer some perspective, one lumen is deemed equal to the light of a lit candle from 1 foot away. So in the example above, the light is capable of producing 820 candles worth of light. That makes sense. I got that. Now, wouldn't a higher wattage mean a brighter light? Conventional logic would dictate that a bulb with higher wattage would produce a brighter light. However, due to modern lighting technology, this isn't always the case. A 23-watt CFL or LED, for instance, can produce the same amount of light as a 100-watt incandescent. Now, despite a 77-watt difference, each light would produce a similar amount of lumens. So what about CFLs and LEDs with the same wattage? Well, I don't know. Let's see what it says. The technological differences between bulbs means wattage cannot be a universal measure of brightness. A 7-watt LED, for example, could produce anywhere from 350 to 500 lumen. Without a proper measurement like lumens, you would have no idea which light is brightest. So how do I pick the right light? If you're looking for the brightest light in the bunch, your search will be very simple. Find the bulb with the most lumens. If you want to avoid blinding yourself anytime you walk into your kitchen, keep track of what lumen measurement works for you, or search for a bulb that's listed as an equivalent to your old incandescent. It may be confusing at first, but lumens will give you more accurate measurement of brightness and help you determine which light is right for you. To find a light's lumens measurement, look on the front face of the package or look for the lighting fact label. It closely resembles the nutritional facts label on food products. So that's how you start with the light bulbs. Now, that's great to know. Being a tactical guy like myself, I'm always into flashlights, tactical flashlights, and that is a big thing for me. I'll buy two flashlights and they say the same lumen, but they give me two totally different effects. So I've looked up this. This was on maginstrument.com. And it's pretty thorough, and I'm going to read it. But here, once again, I'm going to show on the video here for later on if you can see this. I don't know if you're going to be able to see it, but we've got this gauge here by the ANSI standard, and I'll explain that in a minute. But this is a standard for everybody to go by so that when you go and compare apples to apples, you can make sense of it all. So I'm going to read this in a second. But first of all, ANSI lumen versus beam distance and peak beam intensity flashlight performance testing, the ANSI standard. In 2009, the American National Standards Institute, ANSI, in cooperation with the National Electronic Manufacturers Association, published a standard called the ANSI NEMA FL1-2009 Flashlight Basic Performance Standard. The ANSI standard has become widely accepted in the portable flashlights lighting industry because it affords a practical way to make apples-to-apples comparison among different flashlights. Although the ANSI standard is not mandatory, many have chosen to follow it. That is why product packaging, product literature, and on websites are displayed certain flashlight performance data in the form of an ANSI strip. And that's what I was showing you here on the video. I'm showing it to you again, if you can see that. The ANSI strip. So-called because it uses the officially designated ANSI logos to report data taken in the ANSI-prescribed way. The ANSI standard defines four basic performance categories and prescribes official logos for displaying results. The following table lists the categories, and for each one indicates the unit of measure, the official logo, and the basic meaning of the category. The first one here is light output versus beam distance. That's one of the ones that bugged me. I got this bright light, but man, it doesn't go very far. Judging from questions and comments, the distinction between light output and beam distance is a source of some confusion. It is important to understand that these two concepts, light output and beam distance, deal with quite distinct characteristics, which surprisingly too many people don't necessarily go hand in hand. A flashlight can have a very high light output measured in lumens and yet have a very short beam distance measured in meters. And the opposite can also be true. A flashlight can have a very modest output in lumens and yet be remarkably effective in lighting up an object very far away. Now, why is this possible? Because light output is simply a raw measure of the rate at which a light source generates light. Example, how many photons, how much luminous flux the source generates per second. It tells nothing about how well or poorly the light is gathered or directed. Beam distance, on the other hand, is a measure of the maximum distance from which optimally focused flashlight will cast a useful amount of light on a target. The ANSI standard effectively defines a useful level of light by prescribing that the beam distance is the maximum distance at which the flashlight will produce quarter lux of light. A quarter of a lux can roughly be described as the light level provided by a full moon in an open field on a clear night. That's good to know. That's not as bright as day, but is bright enough to see by, a good standard working definition of a useful level of light. So while a flashlight's light output, its lumen rating, tells you nothing at all about how good or bad a job a flashlight does at forming a useful beam of light, the flashlight's beam distance rating is all about its ability to form light into a useful beam and send it in a useful direction. Now, beam distance thus strongly correlates to a flashlight's optical quality, whereas light output has nothing whatsoever to do with beam-forming optics. In fact, to get a high light output source, a flashlight would not even need to have a reflector or lens at all. Are you still with me? This is good info. Optics and runtime. High-quality optics can also play a role in slowing battery consumption and prolonging runtime. As LED technology continues to advance, the number of watts of power consumed per lumen of light generated goes down. But it is still true to say that the more lumens you want, the faster you will consume battery power. So it is still true, and probably always will be true, that excellent beam-forming optics will enhance a flashlight's ability to deliver useful light while avoiding the need for enormous lumen output and correspondingly fast battery drain. That's about lumens, but once again, back to this ANSI strip. It's got, up at the top, it has like three columns: category, unit, and then the logo. And the first category was beam distance. It'll say the unit is going to be measured in meters, and then the logo looks like a flashlight beam going across, and it'll put the proper number of meters that it goes out. And it says a measure of how far away the flashlight will usefully light up an object when its beam is optimally focused, sometimes called throw. The next one is peak beam intensity, and the unit is a candela. And the logo looks like a bullseye almost, with the numbers underneath with the letter CD. Tells how intense the light is in the brightest part of the flashlight's beam when optimally focused, and sometimes called the beam candle power. The next one is runtime. Unit is hours and minutes. And that one's measured, or the symbol for that one's a clock, and it shows the hours and the minutes. And it's a test on how long the flashlight will continuously operate before an endpoint, roughly 10% of initial light output, is reached. And then the last one here, it's light output. Its unit is lumens, and it almost looks like the sun shining. It's got the numbers in the sun, and it says lumens underneath for its logo. And it reads, indicates how much total light, luminous flux, the lamp or LED generates without regard to direction or the flashlight's beam quality or configuration. That was from maginstrument.com. Very interesting article. Very good to know if you're going to be carrying flashlights for the home or tactical flashlights, because I'll tell you what, you can spend a lot of money on a tactical flashlight and you still can't see very well with it because it's not projecting the beam out the way it's supposed to. So with this ANSI standard strip, that can help you out a lot. Okay, Paul, do we have somebody on the line? We have a question here. Okay, we'll get to, is there a discount for seniors and veterans? Yes, there's a discount for this from the state side when applying for a license to carry. It's a $25 fee, so it's an incredible discount. So if you're 60 years or older, I would probably just go the easy way and utilize the 60 years. If not, utilize your veteran, your DD-214, and be able to take advantage of the discount on the state side. Okay, Paul, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to go over our product demo, talk about Blackjack Firearms, and talk about the Picatinny rail. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. I'm Matt, your host, and we're continuing on here. But ladies and gentlemen, lots of people wonder or doubt their ability to function well in a seminar or a training session. And that's not the problem. The problem is finding an instructor who knows what they're doing and who is able to convey those skills to his or her students. If you have any doubts about yourself, I want you to refer to aaronsgunshop.com's testimonial page. You'll get to watch and listen and read testimonials from prior students of ours stating they came in nervous and at the end of the day they craved more training and info. They all broke through the barrier of self-doubt and became empowered with the knowledge that they have that they can use their weapon and function under stress. If you wanted to take a weapons class but were too unsure to commit, I challenge you to review the testimonial page at aaronsgunshop.com. You can do this. So go to aaronsgunshop.com, go watch the videos, read the testimonials, and check it out and sign up for a class. Okay, our product segment here. As you know by now, I'm very good friends with Blackjack Firearms, John and Steve at Blackjack Firearms. And they live right across the road from me. We talk all the time. We're having debates about this and debates about that. Well, the Picatinny rail came up because I'm keen on having a Picatinny rail, not just a Picatinny rail, but a Picatinny rail that goes from front to rear without any brakes. I've talked to you about that before. You've seen that on the weapons that they built for me. But people say, what's a Picatinny rail? Well, that's a good question, and it's good to know. So I'm going to read this here. I pulled off an article, and I'm just going to read it. I went through it, and I said, yep, this is all pretty much correct. So I'm just going to read it here verbatim. It's going to be very clear and precise. And by the time we're done with this section, you're going to be good to go. And then you can give Blackjack Firearms a call. Check them out and say, hey, that Picatinny rail that Matt was talking about, I want one on my rifle. Just go to bjfirearms.biz, Blackjack Firearms, bjfirearms.biz. Picatinny rail. The Picatinny rail, also known as Mil Standard 1913 rail, or Standardization Agreement 2324 rail, or tactical rail, is a bracket on some firearms that provides a standard mounting platform consisting of rails with multiple transverse slots, similar in concept to the earlier commercial Weaver rail mount used to mount telescopic sights. Whereas the earlier Weaver design is based on a low-wide dovetail, the Picatinny variation has a more pronounced angular section. Designed to mount heavy sights and various kinds of variety of accessories and attachments are now available, and the rails are no longer confined to the rear upper surface, the receiver, or long arms, but are either fitted to or machine milled into the upper, side, and lower surfaces of all manner of weapons, from crossbows via pistols and long arms up to and including anti-material rifles. Accessories which can be included vertical tool or pistol grips, bipods and rest, electro-optical sights including image intensifiers, flashlights, and laser sights can be mounted by sliding into place or if already fitted with a Weaver mount clamped to the rail, thus providing backward, one way, compatibility with any items already provided with Weaver-type mounts. Say that five times fast. As mentioned, the rail consists of a precision-crafted strip undercut to form a flattened T-cross section provided with crosswise slots at intervals interspersed with flats that allow accessories to be slid into place from the end of the rail, then locked into place. Slid into the slots between raised flats, then moved a short distance back and forth or clamped to the rail with bolts, thumb screws, or levers as per the Weaver system. The Picatinny locking slot width is 0.206 inches. The spacing of slot centers is 0.394 inches, and the slot depth is 0.118 inches. The only significant difference between the Picatinny rail and the similar Weaver rail are the size of these slots and the fact that they are standardized. Weaver rails have a slot with width of 0.180 inches, but are not necessarily consistent in the spacing of slot centers. As already mentioned, while some accessories are designed to fit on both Weaver and Picatinny rails, most Picatinny devices will not fit on Weaver rails, but from May 2012, most mounting rails are cut to Picatinny standards, and as many shooting accessories can be fitted with just a single recoil pin, this obviates issues of incompatible slot spacing. Now, here's the history of it. Here's where it all comes from. The rail itself dates from work by the ARMS company in the early 1980s, and Otto Reppe in standardizing the Weaver design. Specifications for the M16A2E4 rifle and the M4E1 carbine received type classifications generic in December 1994. These were the M16A2 and the M4 modified when new upper receivers where rails replaced handguards. The rail is named after the Picatinny Arsenal in New Jersey, USA. The Picatinny Arsenal's role in the rail was to test, evaluate it, and to create a military standard for it. This was the Mil Standard 1913, dated February 3, 1995. The Picatinny rail was originally for mounting scopes atop the receivers of larger caliber rifles, but once established, its use expanded to other such accessories as tactical lights, laser aiming modules, night vision devices, reflex sights, foregrips, bipods, and bayonets. Because of their many uses, Picatinny rails and accessories have replaced iron sights in the design of many firearms. And they are also on the undersides of semi-automatic pistol frames and grips. Their usefulness has led to their being used in paintball and aerosol. Very good rail. I like it a lot. But that's where it comes from. And dealing with John and Steve at Blackjack Firearms, they've got all these different types of Picatinny rails. And what I mean by that is there's quad rails, there's key mod rails, there's Magpul accessories that you can put Picatinny rails on here, there, or everywhere. It's not already built into the structure. You can actually modify it for your own personal needs. So the Picatinny rail is very useful, very handy. Check out bjfirearms.biz. Talk to Steve or John there at Blackjack Firearms. Ask them to help you out with modifying your weapon if it does not have a Picatinny rail on it and you want to be able to put a flashlight or something on it. Give them a call. Go to bjfirearms.biz, and they'll be more than happy to square you away. Okay. We're running a little late, so what we're going to do is take one last commercial break here. We're going to get set up for my special guests that are coming on here, and I'm excited to have them on here. We're going to be having Billy and Ricky from On the Dock, and we're going to be talking survival fishing for idiots like me who don't know how to fish. So we'll come back in just a minute.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-Yard Indoor Range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques. Drawing from concealment. Clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills. Period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll into one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4721 or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888, the number 2-BE-FREE.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We're here on the final 25 minutes, and I've got some special guests in here. I'm sure everybody knows these guys, but I want to give them a semi-formal introduction here. Billy Conway and Rick Smith are two friends who grew up hunting and fishing. They share their love of the outdoors with their fellow sportsmen with weekly blogs, newspaper articles, websites, seminars, and radio shows. And you can hear them on KNCT 91.3 FM every Wednesday and Friday for a five-minute update at 6:15 p.m. Every Friday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. on KTM right here, 1400 a.m. Every Saturday morning from 6 to 7 on KRXT 98.5 FM for their weekly Fins, Feathers, and Furs report. And if you live near Gonzales, catch them Saturday morning and noon at KCTI at 1450 AM. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Rick, did you write that?
I didn't write that. I'm not sure. It sounds pretty good. I want to meet these guys.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
They sound impressive.
Well, somehow or another, I got you guys on here, so it worked, and I appreciate you coming on. Guys, I'm going to tell you something. I'm a city boy. I came down here. I'll admit it. I'm a city boy. I know what I'm doing when it comes to tactical stuff. But when it comes to surviving and surviving on fish, I'm going to die. Okay, I'm just going to die. So I'm thinking to myself, who else better to talk to, right? So I got you guys on here. I want to talk about survival fishing. Is there anything you – first of all, say hi to everybody. See what's going on. Anything new?
Well, we appreciate it. We don't get a chance to come on in the middle of the day very often.
No, this is new for us. We're usually not either half awake when we're on the show. But, you know, you talk about survival fishing. We've got a couple of hundred teams, over 400 fishermen, doing just that on Lake LBJ today. Bass Champs is having their tournament over there. And with the wind blowing like this, I'm glad they're there and I'm here in the studios with you, Matt.
Right,
that's right. That's exactly right. But yes, we'd love to talk a little bit about survival fishing and survival boating. You know, there's a lot of things that we can discuss that, and it all comes down to pre-planning.
Okay, well let's mix this all up within the contents of what I do here, and that's being prepared. Okay. And let's say somebody has their bug out bag. I want to hit this really, really quick and first. You got a bug out bag. Is there any fishing supplies that one could put in their bag that's compact, portable, so that if they had to go on the run and there they are, they're out in the woods, by the river, by the pond, by the tank or whatever, they can pull out their bug out bag, some equipment that might be useful and helpful for a guy like me to survive?
Oh, there's a lot of that equipment, especially this time of year when the weather's cold. If you fall in the lake, you've only got a few minutes to get out of the lake. Hypothermia sets in pretty fast, and you're going to need some supplies to in your boat to help you survive to get back to the boat dock and get off the lake. Probably the most important thing is to get out of the water quickly and have a change of clothes in your boat. If you got a change of clothes, you can always get dry and get warm if you got something to wrap up in. You know, and let someone know where you're going to be at on the lake. File a float plan, we call it. Let a friend know. And don't go fishing by yourself in cold weather. The summertime is a little different than wintertime. You can survive a long time in the water. But in the wintertime, try to take a partner with you, someone that can help you if you do have a problem.
Yeah, I was in the military. I was doing river crossings in cold weather. And I tell you, man, that's not a fun thing to do. But let's go. For example, I'm in my car. We have a major catastrophe happen. I can't move my car anymore. I've got to grab my bug out bag, my 2 or 3 day bug out bag. I put it over my shoulder and I got to start walking. And I'm going through the woods and I can't make it to my home or wherever I'm going. And I'm stuck and I'm getting hungry. But I got, what piece of equipment should I have in that bag to survive?
Right. Well, besides all the standard things that you would have in a bug out bag anyway, it's very important to have a set of fishing hooks, and I would take quite a few. And there's a very compact. We're not talking about major gear at all here or any major weight. I'd take at least 50 fishing hooks with me. I'd have them packed ahead of time, and I'd have different sizes, everything from the small hooks for perch, bluegill, those kind of fish, on up to some larger hooks. Also have some sinkers, a few lead sinkers with you, although you can make those in the wild if you have to. And then have you some a few hundred yards of line. And I would take braid is what I would recommend because it's more versatile to use for many other things besides just fishing. You could certainly take monofilament, but I'd recommend braid and a pretty heavy braid, something
well,
around.
Fishermen out there know what he's talking about, right?
That's right. Okay. But those would be very, very important. You can always come across grubs and worms in the wild for bait. That's pretty simple to do. Maybe in some rocky terrain, you might have to turn over a few rocks to find things. But with those basic supplies, you can easily catch fish, and you can survive on fish for a very long time.
What would be your method of casting out?
You don't really need to cast out. Hopefully you've got a shoreline with some vegetation around it, with some willows or some trees like that. You actually, casting out can take some chances of losing some hooks. I would find a deeper spot, possibly with some vegetation in the water, and then tie the line to one of these trees. Use the tree as a pole. Let the line go down to however the depth is, and I would put I'd probably put 15 or 20 of these lines out around the shoreline where I'm going to make my base camp. That way, depending,
is that what they mean by running out of trot line?
Well, it would be similar to a trot line, but these would be individual lines. You could certainly do a trot line if you wanted to, and get you a good flat stone and cast it out, and that does get you in some different depths. Also, very important that you have plenty of hooks, because you are going to lose some and you're going to break off some. But it's important to find the spot where you feel that the fish are going to be.
Now that's where do you hit that hammer on the piece of machinery? That's the question here. So here I am, I'm hungry, I got to do it fast, and I've got my hooks like you just said, and I come up to the stream. Okay, stream, I got to bend in the stream, I got to straighten the stream. Where's the best place? What's the trick of the trade to make sure I got fish on that hook?
Well, it depends on the time of the year you're going to be out there. Like this time of year, I would look for the deeper water. You don't look for real shallow water because the fish are creatures of habit, just like we are. They like to stay comfortable, so they'll try to find the depth where the water is the warmest. In the summertime, if it's a stream, if there's running water in a shoal-type, rapids-type area, put it below the rapids area, because things wash down that river and creek that fish eat. They'll lay down there in that water past that shoal or rapids and collect crawfish, worms, whatever washes down the river or the creek, and that's how they get their food. They're like us too. They're kind of lazy. They'd rather have it come to them than them have to go hunt it.
I don't know. I enjoy the hunt sometimes. I'm doing the hog fishing, though. I don't have the patience for it, I guess. I've never gone fishing. Do you believe that?
Well, we need to correct that. Now, that's something that we can do. We can take you out. And there is a reason it's called fishing and not catching, because there are times that you go out, and with the best of plans and the most expensive equipment, you are just going to fish. You're not going to catch.
So. I must make a correction, though. I was taken out fishing one time. A very good friend of mine took me out fishing. He says, Matt, you got to try this. And I'm out there. I'm like, this ain't working for me, man. It's not working for me. But I know it's one of those skills that you got to learn. It's like very important to know how to fish. Okay. Give me some other things that we can talk about that is important for somebody who's novice like me that they should know, can help them survive, how they can practice, where they can go, what you guys can do to help them maybe.
Well, there's a lot of things that you can do, but certainly like any survival skills, you can read all you want to in the books and you can study about it. But you need to get out there and practice these skills. As you know, you need to get out and practice learning to start a fire. It's great to read it in the book, watch the YouTube videos, and learn. But until you get out there and experiment and figure out how to do it in the environment, because it changes depending on where you might need those survival skills, what the environment you're in. Certainly, get out and do some fishing and kind of learn about the habitats of the fish. And as Billy said, it depends totally on the time of year as to where you're going to find those fish, because they want to be comfortable. They're cold-blooded, and they want to find plenty of oxygen in the water, and they want to find easy prey, something that they can eat on. And you never know, because two guys can be fishing in the same boat. One can be using lure A, the other one lure B, and one's catching all the fish. So it depends a lot on not just technique, but what you've got on that line.
And another thing, What are you going to do with the fish after you catch them?
That's a good question.
You know? Well, you're going to want to cook these fish. And you see back in on TV and in the shows all the time, these guys rubbing these rocks together to try to start fires and things like that. The best thing to do in that bag you were talking about is put a small starter log in your bag. That way, if you're stranded, and make sure you got some matches or a lighter of some kind, mm-hmm. because then you've always got a source to make a fire and make heat. You can always find something to burn after you get the fire started. And raw fish are not very good,
so
you're going to need to cook your fish.
So what would cooking the fish, what are some tricks on that?
Well, you can just put it, actually, on a stick and hold it over the fire and let it cook. Because you're probably not going to have pots and pans if you're in a survival mode,
unless it's in your bug out.
Or you can put a rock on the fire and lay the fish on the rock and let it fry on the rock.
You know, this is really weird because I'm about to give a class later today, and I know what I'm doing. Okay, I know it inside and out, top to bottom, the whole works. And now we're talking about fishing. I feel like such a novice. I'm kind of feeling like what a student who's going to learn how to shoot a gun feels when it comes to fishing. I'm terrible at this. So I'm going to start. I want to ask you, though, you're going to say something? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the things that in any survival mode is having enough liquid, enough water. And it is safe to eat the eyes of a fish, and it's safe to drink the water from the bodily fluids of most fish. And that's something most people don't realize, especially if you're in a saltwater environment. A lot of mariners have been able to survive on just eating the eyes. I know that sounds terrible, but when you're thirsty, there's nothing better. And so that is fresh water in those membranes.
That's interesting.
So it's just something else to take into consideration. We all know that there's two kinds of water. There's the kind that is potable, that you can drink, and then there's a kind in the wild that you're not sure about if it's been standing for a while. So if you don't have the proper straw or drinking bottle with you, then remember that all parts of that fish, those are edible parts, and there's a lot of moisture in there.
Do you have, on the top of your head, a book, a manual, something that somebody can say, you have to go out and experience it for yourself, obviously, but this is a checklist of things that a person could get and say, I'm not a fisherman, but I know how important it is to be able to fish. I'm not going to have the opportunity to go train, but I got to have a crash course in it somehow. Is there anything like that covers all the bases that you're happy with?
Well, are you talking about learning to fish, or you are talking about survival fishing techniques?
Survival mode.
Yes, there are some books out there that have some great information in them, especially as related to saltwater, because it seems like there's a lot more of those incidents where people have to survive for a long period of time on their wits and their survival techniques, their ability to survive, much more so than in freshwater. I don't have a name of them right offhand, but if you Google, there are several great books out. I know there's one that's about the Native American experience that was written about survival techniques that Native Americans have done, and it's got about 50 different techniques, and out of those, about 20 of them are all about fishing.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. You made a comment about different types of fishing hooks. I can understand the different sizes, but is there different types of hooks for different purposes?
There is different types of hooks for different purposes. You know, there's actually snare hooks that you can use if you can see the fish. Put a line on the end of a pole, and you could actually snare the fish. A treble hook, that's three hooks that are on the same platform, I guess, and you would just put it down there and try to snare the fish. There's the round hooks that a lot of people use for catfishing. There's of course different sizes, but yeah, there is different hooks for different applications. But I would definitely have some snare hooks in the bag just in case you can see what you're trying to catch and you can actually snare it.
I do have to make one comment. That is illegal, by the way, but in a survival technique, you're not worried about that. You're
Thank
worried
you for that disclaimer.
Yes, I just had to put that disclaimer for the game wardens that are out there listening.
But is that also true for rough fish?
Not true for rough fish. Okay, you got me there. So that,
why don't we
that
explain
is
to
a good one.
Especially me, what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, there's two types of fish, basically. There's game fish that are controlled by the state parks and wildlife as far as bag limits and length limits and this kind of thing. And then there's rough fish. A lot of the rough fish do not have any limits, and you can catch them any way that's legal. One other thing that's a good thing, if you end up with that out in the wilds and you don't have the ability, you forgot to take any hooks or anything, go back to the old way of gigging. You can make a good gig stick out of a limb by spreading it apart, making about four different pointed areas on it, and gigging. You can gig for frogs, you can gig for fish, but don't just try a single stick with a single point on it. You need to create your own gig, and pretty easy to do, especially if you happen to have a good knife with you, and if not, then find you some good flint rock.
I wanted to ask you that. I forget the movie of it with Tom Hanks. There's a scene in there where he's surviving on the island, and he gets the spear, and he spears the fish after a while. Is there a trick on direction, angle, behind the fish, in front of the fish, side of the fish, so that you don't spook him when you're trying to spear him?
Wherever you can put the stick in it. But on the rough fish and the game fish, the example of the rough fish are carp, the carp family, the buffalo, and that type fish. Your bass, white bass, bluegill, catfish, all those are considered game fish, and it's not legal to snare them. But, you know, sometimes you have to survive.
That's right.
Talk about the trout line. Explain it.
Well, this is a series of hooks, usually up to 25 hooks on a line, quite often attached to a limb or something, a stick on the shore, and then a weight on the other end. And ever so many feet, you'll have a hook attached to it. Each of those hooks is baited with something like shad or chicken livers or whatever that you might be able to have with you. And you take that loose end, the bitter end of it, throw that rock out as far as you can. And so then you're fishing at different depths. You're fishing everything from up by the shores, which would typically be shallow water, on out to deep water. And then when you see that limb moving, then you've got a fish on there, a good chance of catching more than one on that, because you've got up to 25 hooks. Of course, in survival, you'd have as many as you wanted, I guess.
Okay.
Of course, when you're talking about survival, too, you're talking about fish, but don't limit it to fish. There's crayfish in the water. There's mussel in the water. There's clams in the water. All these are edible. Ask the people from Louisiana. You know, crayfish are popular over there. It's a delicacy. And so these are all in the water, too, and it's easy to catch them. Crayfish, all you do is go along the shallow water, turn the rocks over, and just look for them.
I'm actually quite embarrassed with myself, because I'm one who practices being prepared in all different aspects as much as I can. Fishing, though, is one of those things with me. I'm like, I'm over here. I don't want to deal with it. I'm just not into it. Big mistake. There's so much, just based on what you're telling me, water, all the different types of food besides fish that you can eat. It's a plethora of nutrients and energy and food for you in the water if you just know what you're doing.
That's exactly right. It's an easy way to acquire the protein that you need to survive. And, you know, hunting wild game, especially if you do not have the skills or a gun or something, can be difficult. There are ways to trap it, but you can expend a lot of energy. Fishing, you do not typically expend that much energy, and there's so many different kinds of proteins that you can get from the fishing environment.
Mm-hmm. And don't just think about if you're in a situation like this, don't just think about what's in the water, because you've got trees that have nuts, you've got vines that have berries. A lot of these things are edible also, and they grow in abundance along rivers and streams.
Okay, great info. There's this, I'm not even sure what the device is called. It's a wheel. You set it up, you throw the line out, and it bobs like this. What do we call that? Help me on that. Is that any good to have in your backpack?
That certainly would help. It is a little automatic reel that is very light to carry with you, and when the fish strikes, it automatically sets the hook for you.
That sounds like a fishing rod for dummies.
Yeah, that's referred to as it's a yo-yo. It's what it's called. And in Texas, that's also illegal.
Oh, wow. Right.
But again, you're in a survival mode.
It's like brass knuckles. You can buy as many as you want. Don't wear them. This yo-yo, you can buy as many as you want, but you can't use it. All right. What were you going to say?
It's just, it's not illegal to own one. It's just illegal to use it.
And I guess when it, stuff hits the fan, who really cares, right? You're in survival mode. Okay. What else can you tell me here? We were talking about on the ground. What about on the water? You were talking about boats, things on the boats. Is there anything else that we need to know about when it comes to fishing and surviving on the water? Let's say we don't have a huge fishing boat. We just got a basic, what, John boat? Is that what you call it? And you've got something portable you can carry out there. What can you tell me about that?
Well, you need to always plan ahead. And Billy alluded to it earlier in the show about following a float plan. And this is a simple, just let your family know where you're going to be, what ramp you're putting in, what river you're going to be on, where you're going to be. And then hopefully you have a cell phone with a fully charged battery with you in a waterproof bag of some type so that you can call them if the fish are really biting and you want to stay out for a longer period of time. Let them know so that they're not worried about you. Do take some waterproof matches. Think about the fact, planning ahead, that you may be out there for 48 or 72 hours. You could easily fall out of the boat. There'd be other things that could happen. That's one of the reasons to always go with a friend. So you plan ahead for these things. You have, we call them ditty bags in boating, where it's just a bag with some essentials, some power bars, some extra bottles of water, and this kind of thing. But you've got to remember that if you happen to fall out of that boat and it floats away from you, then you are in trouble because that ditty bag is probably still in the boat. We always wear our life jackets this time of year. It's recommended that you wear your personal flotation device year-round, but it's especially important this time of year. Take a change of clothes, have a flashlight with you, have something to start a fire.
Mm-hmm. And Rick, you also mentioned that the boat could float away from you, and it's very important if you're not wearing a life jacket, your boat's floating away, don't try to swim to get the boat because you're going to lose that battle most of the time. Fatigue's going to set in, then you're going to be in trouble. If the boat floats away, go to shore. Let the boat go.
Also,
how far out would that be?
It depends on the person, how good a swimmer you are.
Okay, so it's either the shore or the boat, depending which way you're going to drown first. Is that what you're saying?
It's an emergency. You have to make a decision.
It's always best to try to stick with the boat if you can and to get out of the water as quickly as you can. Your body heat is dissipated much more rapidly when you're in the water, so even though it may be cold out, getting out of the water, sitting on the bow of the boat, even though it may be upside down, try to dry out as much as you can. Get your clothes as dry as you can. But it's a lot easier to see a boat from the air if a helicopter's out looking for you than it is to see just a person with their head bobbing in the water.
Gotcha. Okay, in normal conditions, licensing to go fishing, what's the deal on that?
It is required to carry a fishing license with you. You can get those at all the big box stores and any of the parks and wildlife departments. You can also get them online. Licenses are very in price. We recommend the jumbo. That way you get the hunting and fishing license with the saltwater and freshwater stamps all part of it. That's the best way to go. That money does help parks and wildlife. It helps our natural resources here in Texas. But if you want just a fishing license, you can get just a fishing license. I believe they're around $25 for a resident Texan.
So that allows you to fish anything you want?
That's right. You do have to get the saltwater and freshwater endorsements, though.
Okay. It allows you to fish any public waters. If you want to fish on someone's property, if the river flows through someone's property, you want to fish that river, you do need to get permission from that landowner.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that would be, especially if the landowner doesn't like it. Okay, well, guys, look, time's ticking away here. I'm going to have to close it up in just a minute. You guys want to finish up with anything? Tell us about what's going on, anything, upcoming events?
A lot of bass tournaments going on. Like I said, we've got one on LBJ today. We just remind everyone, remember your safety rules. Think about the fact that how you're going to get back in that boat. If you do happen to fall out, have a plan ahead of time, and hopefully you have a ladder. But if you don't, have a buddy with you to help you get back in. And just plan ahead, be safe, and enjoy it because our lakes are full. It's the first time in 7 years that we've had this much water. Fishing is fabulous, and it's going to be a great spring and summer. Thanks for having us on, Matt.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Thanks for coming. I'll tell you what, just this little conversation has sparked my juices flowing as to, like, I mean, I got to get with this thing, you know? I know a lot of people do it. A lot of people love to fish. I just never got in the groove. I just need to see if I can catch the bug, and and get going with it. Okay, everybody, that was a great conversation. We've got Rick Smith and Billy Conway, and they're with On the Dock, and I told you about their stations they're on. You can check this replay on my website at aaronsgunshop.com. But don't forget, they're here Friday afternoons, 5 to 6 p.m., right here on this station, KTEM 1400. Check them out, and hopefully we can get them back on in the future. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to close up shop here, and I've got to race out, get back to camera. I got a license to carry class at 2:30, so I'm going to have to move pretty quick. But until next week. Oh, speaking of next week, we have a seminar on Saturday, and that's going to be from 8 until 6. And I've got to talk with Paul here. We're going to try and coordinate and see if I can record the session of my seminar and have it played here during showtime. So we're going to work on that. So next Saturday at 12 o'clock, we may have you listening to me doing a class at the shop there in Cameron. So until next week, keep your powder dry and God bless.
Station in Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.